At Arizona State University, we're bringing world-class education from our globally acclaimed faculty to you. Ranked number one in innovation for 10 consecutive years, and number two among public universities for employability, ASU isn't just ahead of the curve, it's creating new paths to success. Earn your degree from the nation's most innovative university. Online, that's a degree better. Explore more than 300 undergraduate, graduate, and certificate programs at asuonline.asu.edu. Ranked number one in innovation 10 consecutive years, Arizona State University isn't just ahead of the curve. It's creating new paths to success. Learn from notable clinical and research faculty. Online, that's a degree better. Explore programs at asuonline.asu.edu.
Psst, how'd you like to listen to .NET Rocks with no ads? Easy. Become a patron. For just $5 a month, you get access to a private RSS feed where all the shows have no ads. $20 a month will get you that and a special .NET Rocks patron mug. Sign up now at patreon.dotnetrocks.com.
Hey, guess what? It's .NET Rocks 2025 edition. I'm Carl Franklin.
I'm Richard Campbell.
Happy New Year, everybody. And how'd you do your New Year's?
We did New Year's up on the coast because we went down to the city for Christmas, right? Yeah. Spent time with the girls. The youngest is pregnant, so we call it the baby bump Christmas.
Very nice.
And then New Year's, we came back up. I had a party in the boathouse with a little mixing of the worlds. You know, we're building friendship groups up on the coast. So from a few of those couples showed up and a few from back on the mainland. And
yeah, I saw the pictures on Facebook. Looked a lot of fun.
Yeah. You know, the best thing you can hope for in the new year, belly laughs. Like yeah. Laughing so hard you're crying. That's what we did over New Year's.
That's great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we just had a quiet New Year's here. It was nice, you know, just the fam.
It's always good.
Yeah. So let's start this show with a better known framework, which is interestingly about last year. Roll the music.
Interesting. All right, man, what do you got?
This is a video by the Visual Studio team, our favorite new Visual Studio features of 2024. So they took a look at all the things that were added to Visual Studio in 2024.
Which is a lot.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's constant.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're like most of us, you don't know about these new features until somebody says, hey, you know, Scott Hanselman says, hey, do you know this?
Yeah.
And then you look it up.
People make whole talks about this, just showing features in Studio you didn't know about because there's just so darn many of them.
Right. Yeah. It's become the word of coding, hasn't it? The Microsoft Word. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, anyway, it's a good video. And if you have, how long is it? Well, anyway, it's a good video. And if you got about 20 minutes to kill, check it out. It's good stuff. So that's what I got. Know it, learn it, love it. Who's talking to us, Richard?
Grabbed a comment off of show 1916, the one we recorded with our friend Rendell called How Simple Is As Simple As Possible.
Yeah.
And another friend of ars, Richard Rukima, also known as CodePewter, had a good comment here, mostly about Blazor, where he said, simplicity in web application development, it's not a simple conversation. Blazor server and transitioning to WASM is also not simple. So why are we doing web app development anyway? App distribution and maintenance is why we wanted it, web apps over the client-side app installs. Yeah, definitely. Always running the current version, don't need to deploy, running in a sandbox. Like, there's good things.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So we leveraged the distribution model of the browser and then got busy building apps, this time without easy access to what we had before, mostly client-side resources. Nothing that 15 megs of JavaScript can't fix with a sprinkle of CSS to really challenge that straight jacket.
He's our age too, so he's talking experience here.
Chris Love would have words with you.
Oh, yes.
So let's take application development, make the server puke it all into a browser box and give it a solid stir for fun while dumping in new app features or ingredients, more JavaScript frameworks. And such is the goodness and all the joy of distribution. HTML was never supposed to be used as a user experience interface for application development amidst the formatting and presentation of electronic documents. It was about scientific papers with hyperlinking, right? Then there's Blazor server. Let's not worry about WASM for now. Just about using the server environment to create HTML documents that are rendered in the browser. Does not even need a page refresh. It builds the page using modular components. A click in the browser is meaning less without the context of where it happened. A keystroke has the same requirements in both cases. The event requires context.
Mm-hmm.
That is simple. HTML is simple, but stupid. Why are we making it more complicated? Somebody say server overload. Server load for server-side rendering using cloud resources is not the same as a web farm or service. True.
Yeah.
Applications never use servers. They use services provided by servers. If your application needs hosting resources from the cloud, why are we thinking about servers? And once again, Blazor server framework is nothing more than moving the context of the client-side event and exposing that in the context of the application, mix in application code, update the component of the doc, and render just tailored bytes back to the document being viewed in the client. It's nice,
mm-hmm.
simple, and with a minimal byte count to transport. And that's my definition of web simplicity.
Yeah.
Can't argue with that. It's a shame we make such a mess of it.
He has seen the light.
Yeah, he's trying to anyway.
Yeah.
Rich, thanks so much for your comment. I'd send you a copy of Music Go, but you got one.
Yeah. He's going to be a guest in a couple weeks if all goes well.
And he's going to be a guest shortly, too. So we'll be hearing from him anyway. I'll tease him some more.
Yeah. Very good.
And if you'd like a copy of Music Go, write a comment on the website at .NETROCKS.com or on the Facebooks. We publish every show there. And if you comment there and I read it on the show, we'll send you a copy of Music Go.
And Music to Code By, of course, is a series of 24-minute or 25-minute music pieces that you can listen to while you code that helps you focus and keep you from getting distracted. And if you want to pay for it, it's at musictocodeby.net. Also, you could get a copy by sending us a message on the social medias other than Facebook's. We've been on X Twitter for the longest time. We're also on Mastodon and Blue Sky. And some variation of at Carl Franklin and at Rich Campbell, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Blue Sky seems to have all the action these days, man. Like I realized I was scrolling through Blue Sky today and it looks so much like the old Twitter. I forgot I was on Blue Sky.
Yeah. Except it's not dumb. Well, right.
It's kind of the old Twitter.
Yeah. All right. Let's bring on our guest, Nathan Westfall. He is a senior.
No history.
Oh, you know what? So here's the thing. I looked at 1935 in the history, and it's so jam-packed. Like, yeah. We can't even cover it all, but I'll ask you, Richard, what is your...
I only pick one thing. You know me. I'm going to pick one thing.
Yeah.
And the one thing is James Chadwick's proof that the neutron exists.
How amazing.
Yeah. Well, think about this. That's 1935.
Hmm.
And within 10 years, the first atomic bomb would go off.
Yeah.
And you need neutrons. Like... That's how fast.
Yeah.
So
it's amazing. The things that happened in this relatively short time period is just explosive.
Yeah.
Literally.
In so many different ways, right? Like between the Great Depression, the rise of fascism, the explosion into World War II.
Yeah.
Like that was a tumultuous 10 plus years. And we just happened to be doing shows in those show numbers right now.
And a byproduct was a lot of innovation, a byproduct of the war and all of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, for better or worse, the military spends a lot. And a lot of that funding was military.
Highway system because of the military.
50s.
In America.
We got a little time yet for that.
Yeah.
It'll be later this year.
Yeah. Still, it was Eisenhower's idea because he wanted mobility.
Yeah.
All right. Enough of that. That's coming. Let's bring on Nathan Westfall. As I started to say before, he is a senior software engineering manager at Tyler Technologies, leading the cloud operations and mobile development team for student transportation. He started his development journey with PHP and Ruby on Rails, but fell in love with the .NET ecosystem once leaving college early for his first job. Outside of development, you can find him mixing audio at your local bar or fishing on a frozen lake. One of those things I do all the time.
Yeah. I wonder which one.
It's not fishing. Welcome.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
So you've been listening to the show for a while, you said.
I have been. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of the way I learn is podcast and everything else. And you guys are fun to listen to. So
that's good.
It's kind of, as Richard was saying earlier, it's nice to now see how the sausage is made. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's good to have you at the table.
Nice.
Pass the sausage.
So what have you been working on, Nathan?
Yeah. So Tyler Technologies, what I work on in student transportation is, you know, every yellow school bus you see on the road in the US and Canada. Mm. We interact with. So we're in one of every four school districts uses a Tyler system. Wow. And the app that I'm here to talk about is the public-facing app, so the one that any parent who has a kid on the bus that we integrate with can use, called MyRide K-12. And it's an app that we rewrote earlier last year. So in the beginning of 2024, it started to roll out. And it is a Blazor MAUI hybrid application, works on web, iOS, Android, and it is much Blazor as you could possibly imagine shoved into this app to have it run at scale and everything else.
Yeah. I've already got a man crush on you, man. That is, you're speaking my language here.
What was it before it was Blazor?
Yeah, good question. So it was Xamarin Forms. The original version of this app actually came out a couple months after .NET 1. So .NET Core 1 was released. That's how early we were to .NET Core and everything else. And what we learned early on was I can do Xamarin Forms pretty well. But then when I have to make those same features on web in .NET Core and AngularJS at the time, my feature drift became insane, right? It kind of became worse and worse over time to try to do something in Forms for iOS, maybe something a little different for Android, and then also then change languages entirely for web. So we got the opportunity to rewrite it in 2023, released it in 2024, and went full Blazor so we could share about 95% of our code between iOS, Android, and web is all the same.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
But also means you battled through the tough times at Xamarin too, right? Because that was... Those were early bits.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. When I even used Xamarin before I joined Tyler, when Microsoft had only had acquired it like very, very recently. So, I mean, I've been using Xamarin for almost as long as it's been out. Mm.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a lot smoother ride than it actually turned out to be. I was so excited when Xamarin, you know, came on the scene.
Yeah.
And the promise of Xamarin Forms and all that stuff was just amazing. And then just wore me down. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, and I wrestle with, is it the problem with the tooling? Is it just a problem with building mobile apps? Like this separation between working on a machine different from the app environment, like that cycle's just hard and it's diverse. Like that combination just doesn't matter what the tools are. It's a battle compared to any other kind of
it is. And whether the tools keep you up to date or you have to keep up to date, you're always going to end up doing some kind of tweaking on one platform you're not doing on the other. And that's why I think the road that you took, which is Blazor Hybrid, gets rid of all that, because the cross-platformness is done in the browser, which has had many, many years to go to get its cross-platform story done, and it's there.
No, I'm with you. I think the biggest part of Xamarin Forms that was tough is even that you had all this shared UI code and C# code at the time. I'm fighting iOS at the time. You know, releases were in June. Android was later in the year. I'd have to update all my Android dependencies just so Forms would work, right? And to your point, Carl, if I'm just using a browser, which I know will render my CSS the same way, my dependencies just shrunk and, you know, so small. So
So if you can do a web app in Blazor, you can do a mobile app in Blazor.
Right. Yep.
That's what it comes down to.
Yep. And we're testing it both, because we even went the whole route. We're not using Blazor server at all. We went full WebAssembly.
Yeah.
And went the full, if I don't have to host the server, why would I? So
yeah, sure.
That's what we're doing. Yeah.
Well, and you've got I mean, it's not really a public facing app in the sense that it is a known set of users. It's parents of students.
Yeah.
But it's still a lot, like the server load on that. I think Blazor server makes a lot of sense when it's an internal app with a certain number of employees done. To make that public facing, that's really hazardous.
And our traffic's really predictable, right? Like we can see different time zones come online, because buses normally roll in the same morning or same time, East Coast and then Central and then West.
Right You know when it's going to be busy.
Right. Parents are going to check the app twice a day, when their kid's going to school and when their kid's coming home.
Yeah.
And everyone's doing it at the same time almost.
Although, aren't you then making an argument in favor of server side?
Kind of, you know, but the cost at the end of the day for WebAssembly to support all of this is, I have, we're partnered with AWS here at Tyler. So we're using .NET on AWS, but the whole web server for hundreds of thousands of parents is an S3 bucket and a CDN. And I'm done. That's it. That's all I got.
Yeah, that's great. Nice. So I got to ask, what are you using for authentication?
Cognito, actually.
Huh. Tell me about Cognito.
Yeah. So Cognito, we're going back and forth about what we should use. There's a whole bunch of obviously authentication providers you can use. Mm-hmm. Cognito, we just wanted to stay within the Amazon ecosystem, because we don't have huge requirements for authentication. They have a nice portal for users self-registering, which is our big use case. It's not like we create these accounts for parents. They can self-register.
Good.
And give us the option to do social logins down the road. So, you know, we're over 650,000 users that have been created in Cognito. And then even so, Cognito created a nice pipeline because we were not in Cognito come Xamarin Forms. And they let you actually in real time. So once a user tries to log in for the first time, we can migrate those users in real time. So no password change, no nothing.
If you're going to run on AWS, you should use AWS as authenticator, just the same way that if you're going to run on Azure, you should be using Azure AD, right? Like,
yeah, I'm a big fan of keeping it together.
Yeah. It's just not worth the pain.
Yeah.
Like, it's very challenging to build a unified authentication strategy across clouds. You're fighting that a lot.
Right.
And so I imagine that all the credentials are kept out of your reach.
Yeah.
So that you're not liable for, you know, break-ins or anything like that.
Correct. Which is another big benefit. We used to host it ourselves with .NET's identity server, and handled all that. And that's all gone now. Everyone got migrated over. And again, that real time is nice because you can use Lambda when they log in. Oh, this user doesn't exist. Let me check your existing user store. And the user never had to change their password. It just moves right over. And
that's great.
Nice.
Starts working.
Yeah. So you did that very nice migration. They never knew you changed authentication strategies. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yep. No idea.
And then one day nobody's hitting that identity server anymore and you can turn it off one day.
Correct. I had the pleasure of a couple months ago finally turning everything off, and it felt so nice to go through and web servers off, APIs off, you know, everything got shut down.
Why do we feel good when we turn stuff off?
It's like calming, right?
Yeah, no. Because the money goes back into your wallet. It's reversing the flow of money.
But it's also an end of pain, right? Like, that's one area that's not going to hurt you anymore because it's off.
Make the bad man stop.
Oh, man.
I know. There was a brief period where we were rewriting it, and I always hated getting an issue come through. And I'm like, I got to open Xamarin Forms again, and I got to go through and fix this. And after using Blazor for so long rewriting, it was hard to go back.
Oh yeah.
Wandering back into Xamarin Forms, like walking into a dark forest.
Yeah.
I remember why I left this place. I appreciate that.
It's on my list of things to do to open up Maui in .NET 9 and take a good hard look at it again. I don't, because ever since I found, you know, the Blazor hybrid, Maui hybrid stuff, I haven't gone back.
Yeah.
Basically. So
yeah, we've done a few to play around with it, but every time I do it, feel the need of like, I could just do this in Blazor and I'm used to it and it works just as good. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah. If you're getting the result, if the customer's happy, which is parents, who are never happy, then you're doing all right.
Right. Right. Yeah. You can definitely say that again. So yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So don't mess with it.
And how many users did you say you had?
We currently have over 650,000 registered, and our daily active counts pretty high on the top of that. So
wow.
Yeah. You do not want to do tech support for 650,000 people. That's not good.
No.
They gotta be all self-service. But also they don't care. They just want to know where the kid is.
Correct, which is a whole nother set of problems that we've had to do in a way that's helping both the district, who is really our customer, right? The school district is the one that uses our technology.
Those are the ones who are paying you.
Right. Mm. But they're servicing the parents, and we also have to serve the parents and the district. So how do I explain to the parent, hey, this bus is out of commission, right? And this is why you can't see where your kid is, right? And solving all these problems to someone who's not in the operation of school busing, right?
Right.
Making them not come back at us. Obviously, we want to protect our app ratings as much as possible and be like,
sure,
hey, your app's not working. But at the end of the day, it's, no, your bus didn't drive today because it's a holiday. True story, right?
So is that what your app does primarily, is track buses?
Yeah. So it does two different things. So you can find your kid's schedule all through self-registration. So if I had my kid was in elementary school, I could register them to the app and see, hey, the bus is going to pick them up at this corner every Monday through Friday at 8:20 in the morning. This is my driver's name and what bus is coming. And then if the district allows it and has the capability, you can actually see when your bus is coming in near real time. You get notifications kind of like Uber of your bus is about to arrive. It's 5 minutes away. It's running late. And kind of provides that experience so parents can just really quickly say, I mean, it was a cold day up here in New York. I was, you know, outside and didn't realize how windy it was. I would hate if I had to go stand at the bus stop for 20 minutes hoping the bus would show up.
Nope.
It's nice if I can get that notification, just walk outside.
What about kids 14 and older, let's say? Can they use the app as well?
They technically can. We obviously try to restrict it as much as possible as it's meant for the parent, but there's parents have the ability to share that information with any other account, right?
Okay.
So they can even say, hey, for the day, the babysitter can have it to make sure that my kid gets off the bus.
Nice. But the kid wouldn't necessarily be waiting at the bus and it's late and be able to flip up the app and say, oh yeah, it's 10 minutes late.
Yeah, we have some kids that do it, but primarily it's the older kids are kind of left on their own, as you know, as your parent. Yeah. You're becoming more of an adult. It's a lot of kids in elementary school, right? Because even in some states, depending on your age, you have to be at the stop for the kid to get dropped off.
True.
So I don't want to wait outside.
Plus, there's the COPPA thing, right?
Yes.
The COPPA laws against
kids
using software. If you were going to allow kids, I think it's 14 and younger or under 14.
Yeah, it's somewhere like that. 13, 14. Yeah.
13 and under. If you're going to allow them to use it.
Not that there's any sensitive information here. It's the location of a bus.
Yeah, you'd have to go through hoops to get that.
Yep.
We happen to be recording this when there was a pretty big snowfall through central. US. So I got to think that impacts buses a whole bunch. And that's when everybody's going to be hammering on the app. Like,
have you seen the maps?
Correct.
Is the bus running? Is it moving?
Yep.
Have you seen the maps? Like this white band all the way through the Midwest from the West Coast to the East Coast.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Quite a piece of weather.
Anyway.
So do you present it as a map or is it just a table of this is the bus, this is where it'll be?
Yeah. No, good question. It's all configured by the district because different districts have different policies. And, you know, some districts have a policy where they don't want to show the parent the bus, just only it's about to arrive soon because they don't want angry parent getting in their car and chasing the bus down because they missed their kid and so on and so forth. Right. But if they allow everything, you can see your bus on a map. We use SignalR to broadcast that information.
Cool.
And show it live within the app. You can interact with it, follow it in 3D, all this other fun stuff.
So. Nice. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, no, that's so you can go, but it's very like Uber-esque in that sense.
Yes.
That you can literally watch the vehicle in motion. But I can also see why certain districts would say, you know, that's probably a little too much information.
That's a little creepy.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. You get both extremes. I want to see everything and I want to see nothing, right?
Yeah.
The Uber thing is one we've been trying to deal with for a while because Uber's obviously great, right? I mean, I've gone to the airport so many times and I go to a conference, so I'll pull up Uber, get where I need to go. But people don't quite understand all the time is that Uber is nice because you as a driver accept that I'm carrying my one passenger somewhere else, while a school bus is, if it's all configured properly, because the driver can't do any interaction while they're driving, they can't have a screen up, they can't have all this other technology that a taxi driver, Uber driver can have. I can't just notify one parent. I have to notify 60 kids maybe and their families and not also share where those 59 other kids also live, right? And how do I do that in a different way?
Challenge.
Yeah.
No, it's great. It's a great question. It's like, what's the right thing to do there?
So you have, let's count the clients. You have web, obviously, and mobile. Do you also have Windows and Mac clients?
We don't have Windows because actually all of the development team, including myself, we only run Macs. I do have it running on a Mac locally, though, because that's how I do development is mostly in the Mac.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Because you're using the Maui hybrid model, right?
Correct. There's nothing stopping us. It's more...
nothing stopping you.
Yeah. It's more because of, got to go through enterprise hoops. I don't want to fight the...
Yeah, exactly. Store. I mean, that comes back to Richard Rukema's point, is that we love these mobile things because you can just pull them up. You get the latest version. You don't have to install them and WPF. Who needs it for this kind of app? Who needs that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's face it, you don't want to run WPF on a
That would be gosh. Bad.
Did you also take a look at some of the other sort of multi client frameworks out there before you decided on this, or was it a natural progression because you were always using Xamarin already?
Yeah, it was obviously we were leaning this way. We were using Blazor already since what was it, .NET Core 3.3.1, depending on whether you're using WebAssembly or not. So we kind of were already familiar with Blazor. Tyler also has a internal UI library that we use, and of course it's web components only. So it's, do I want to port that to something else or keep using web? We did look at things like Flutter and Ionic for a little while, but really we're a .NET shop through and through, even outside of mobile development. So it kind of just made sense for us to stick with .NET. And I've never had any issues with Blazor, which I know people have their opinions on necessarily using WebAssembly and all this other stuff, but it's at least I know what can be wrong, so it's familiar.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, Maui was supposed to be the logical successor to Xamarin Forms. Like, you are making a bigger leap here to jump over to Blazor.
We are, and we definitely walked through that. So we've actually had two apps, and we did them differently. So Ride 360, now known MyRide K12, we did that whole Blazor rewrite, right? We took things in Forms, threw it away, did everything in Blazor. We have another application called MyStock, which is for a different application that we support. Kind of same functionality, but for a different on-prem solution, basically, of bus routing. That one went from Xamarin Forms to Maui. There was no Blazor anything rewrite. That one went through what Microsoft wants you to do of progressing straight over to Maui. And it, because of how that app operated, it didn't have anything overly complex. It wasn't difficult, but it definitely was not as easy as it's made out to be.
Well, both products had their challenges, right?
Yes.
Like, yeah. And I would argue if you still had a Xamarin Forms app today, moving to Maui on .NET 9 is a heck of a lot less painful.
Totally agree. But yeah, definitely less.
If you jump when they wanted you to jump, you jumped into a pit full of glass. Like,
Correct. Yeah, we only did that migration from Forms to Maui within the past 6 months, right? So when all that stuff got worked out and learning curves and all that,
if you can wait. It will, it's a benefit without a doubt. If your app's not currently on fire and people aren't going to kill you,
you
stay with what you got and let the bugs be worked out by somebody else.
Yep.
Well, and also, you're not really going from Maui to Blazor. He's using Blazor inside a Maui app, so it is Maui Blazor essentially. But I was thinking of something like Avalonia. I mean, did you look at that?
Oh yeah, and that we did look at too. So I think Syncfusion has a couple libraries that we were looking at, and all those cross-platform, whether it's web or Maui UI frameworks. And again, what it came down to us was we wanted to stick with the UI components that here at Tyler Tech someone has built, and they were all web components. So we were kind of, do we want to take that and replicate it somewhere else, or do we just want to keep using web components? So,
and it totally makes sense, as you said, because, you know, the cross-platform part is already done.
Yeah.
You're not worrying about this platform, that
plus
platform.
You've got 600,000 users that are used to a look and feel.
Correct.
Don't mess with that. That's just cost for you. If the more you mess with it, the more trouble you're going
to
get.
Yeah, and we want to be good partners at Tyler, right? So Tyler does everything public sector, right? Whether it be courts and justice or public safety or healthcare to student transportation. You know, there's bunches of apps that Tyler reproduces, and we want to make sure that if a parent happens to also be in a district where I can pay my electric bill through Tyler Tech, right? That look and feel is kind of the same.
Oh, interesting. Right. So literally you can have multiple products in the space, and they're like, oh, I know this already.
Yep.
That's cool. That makes sense.
All right. That sounds like a good place to take a break. We'll be right back after these very important messages. Did you know you can lift and shift your .NET framework apps to virtual machines in the cloud? Use the Elastic Beanstalk service to easily migrate to Amazon EC2 with little or no changes. Find out more at aws.amazon.com/elasticbeanstalk.
Are you ready to take your small biz to the next level? At the UPS Store, we have the key to unlock a world of possibilities. We'll sign for your packages and protect them from porch pirates. We'll send tech straight to your phone so you're in the loop for new deliveries, and give your small biz the street cred it deserves with a real street address. So what are you waiting for? Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Come into your local store today.
And we're back. It's .NET Rocks. I'm Carl Franklin. That's Richard Campbell.
Hey.
And that's Nathan Westfall. And we're talking about his application hosting 650,000 plus users with an S3 bucket and a CDN, all in Blazor for mobile clients and for web, and not looking back.
Not at all. Not at all.
Not at all. So no web forms here. No Windows forms.
No.
No WPF.
Gosh, no.
No native client code for iOS or Android. You don't have to deal with that.
Yeah, definitely not UI native code, right?
Yeah.
So I think the only things that we got stuck with, and I say stuck with, they were not major to begin with at all, but in terms of either, you know, browser specific, iOS, Android specific, you got push notifications.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Right.
Always.
Right. Push notifications and authentication. Actually had to have a nice little hack to get it to work in all of them. Because we wanted to use what Blazor does for authentication, but how I log in on a mobile device is not going to be the same on the web. So how do I make sure I can still use, you know, access token provider? How do I still use that on Maui? So
Let's talk about push notifications.
Yeah.
So I'm not talking about SignalR can send you a message and say, hey, how you doing? We're talking about when your app is minimized and you're getting messages in the background and you want that number with a red circle with that number to increment. That is not trivial to do. And in Android, I figured out how to do it by doing an actual foreground service that works as a background service.
Yep.
But that adds another service. And on iOS, forget about it. Like, you have to, you know, draw three quarts of blood and sign over your firstborn. And and then they don't even have it for Blazor, as far as I'm concerned. They didn't last time I checked. So how on earth did you solve that problem?
Yeah. So we, this is, I guess, staying outside of the ecosystem. I know we talked about being inside of it, but we use Azure Notification Hub for push notifications. Okay. Part of the reason was because the older application Xamarin Forms already had it because it was Azure first. And we wanted to just keep the same system in case parents had both apps, right? So it was a decision we made to just keep it around.
But how does that notification service interact with your dormant app?
So we had to write code specific for Android and iOS to tie into both push notifications. So on Android, it's Firebase FCM now, right? They officially retired GCM, unfortunately. And then iOS is always messing with delegates and all this fun stuff that... If it doesn't work how, as you said, if it doesn't work how the docs work, I'm kind of out of luck because it's not like I'm getting any help from Apple anytime soon. So tie into both and just kind of have the native push notification system work. And then if they happen to click the application, you know, we're doing some things with session state to kind of, if Blazor then wants to detect that I have a message saved, then I can prompt that in a totally different way or manage it totally separate.
Yeah. Wow.
But now you're using notification hubs, like you now describing a cloud hybrid app too, because you're also using S3.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A little bit of both on that
It's not complicated at all there, Dave.
No,
I can't imagine why you have any problems.
No.
But no, I see how you got there. Totally makes sense, right? And there's nothing bad about notification hubs. They work.
Yeah. I've honestly, out of all the Azure services I've used, we used to do Azure probably at this point 7 years ago or so, right? From everything that they have to offer. And I've never had any complaints with notification hub. It's honestly nice how easy it works from an API perspective. If I have to generate a notification, how to send it to them, and then how to managing devices, which I've had to do before in terms of my, you know, PNS token on Apple and my Firebase token on Android, and which messages can you get and can't you get. I've written that code before to manage it, and I'd rather never do it again. So,
you also hinted at a thing that I've talked to a bunch of mobile devs about, which is making sure the Android and iPhone versions are utterly in sync. Like, if you had a parents, one with an iPhone, one with an Android, and the app was much different.
Yeah,
like that. I'm surprised how upset people get.
Yeah,
why does iPhone have this and I don't have it on Android?
Yeah, and for us before Blazor, was the web was incredibly out of sync. Like, I can't emphasize how bad. You couldn't see your live bus on web because it was just, it was never built, it never had priority of what was there.
Right.
And now what's nice is because we have all of our shared code and a shared class library, If I have to add a new button, I'm putting it in one spot. I'm quickly testing all three devices and it's out to production right after that. You know, it's mm-hmm. quick.
Mm-hmm. And what are the three devices? iPhone, Android,
and browser.
Browser. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you much phone specific testing? Like, do you care which iPhone or which Android device?
We more so Android because of the possibilities almost being endless, right?
Yes. We call it the drawer of broken dreams for a reason.
for iOS, we only care really about the version of iOS that we support. I don't know if you know, but iOS had a breaking change between iOS 17 and 18 that impacted Maui Hybrid because of that IP address 0.0.0.0 bug, and they took that away, but Maui was using that to spin everything up, and you know, that encouraged us to do more testing around that. But really just iOS changes at that point.
Well, and Apple is so insistent on getting into the latest version of iOS all the time, which is, I think, a little annoying for consumers, but pretty good for devs.
And it's good it's good for consumers because it's security, you know?
And fewer problems in general.
Apple is still the most secure mobile platform there is because they own it top to bottom.
And it's part of that. And part of that is enforcing homogeneity. Like, it's always the latest version. I'm with you. And it's certainly from a dev perspective, if you're willing to jump through iOS hoops, because there are iOS hoops, least it's one OS you more or less have to care about.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
But I've definitely talked to folks who they have to have a Pixel device. They have to have a Samsung device. You know, and then it gets questionable after that. Like, those are the two. And it's at that point you're like at 70%.
Yeah. And foldables, whole other.
You do foldable testing. Good Lord.
I just held up a foldable.
Nice.
Yeah. Only cause our product owner has one. So he'll tell me immediately if something doesn't work, cause that's what he's testing on. So
he cares about.
Yeah.
Well, that's all that changes your media queries completely, right? Like, you have to change the rendering.
Yeah. And some of it's nice in terms of most of the mobile devices kind of work immediately on tablets and larger screens because I'm writing the same code for web anyway, right? We kind of have that mindset as a developer from day one because all of my code for iOS, Android, and the browser are coming from one spot. I'm already thinking about 20 device screen sizes as I'm going here, right? So, you know, making sure that works, localization works, all this stuff is now up in the forefront of a developer instead of kind of at the end.
Sure. And they're absolutely iPad fanatics.
Yes.
If it's not perfect on the iPad, they lose their minds.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. So that issue continues to exist and it's not simple. Like, you really do have to think about how you make your UI and the different screen constraints. Mm.
Correct.
Much less tested.
Yeah. No, we even on some of our differences between like mobile and web, right? We might write a component that renders some UI content, but then we have other logic that's if you're in a browser over this size, I'm prompting it in a dialogue as opposed to if it's on iOS, it's just a full screen new page in Blazor for it to work, right? And gets complicated.
But it sounds like you have a tooling team because you guys have multiple products. So it makes sense to have a tooling team that just worries about, okay, I'm going to make this new collecting text from the user interface. Here's how it'll render on an iPhone. Here's how it'll render on an iPad. Here's how it'll render on Pixel and so forth. Like, it's, and how it'll render on web. Like, you are making different versions and still make it look close to the same.
Yeah. A lot of that's still on us in terms of how we want it to look, but the components are nice in the fact that they all have accessibility in mind, right? They all have different screen sizes in mind and all that stuff. Right. So how we use them, it's kind of hard to mess up. I'll put it that way, right? We can, but it is harder to mess up.
Yeah, and you can test. Right. You can test on a mobile device just by shrinking the browser, right?
Right.
I mean, it's essentially what you do. Yeah. You test the reactivity of it.
Yep.
Richard, do you remember when we used to do shows on mobile and the tablet show and all that stuff?
Yeah.
And we would always say, you know, what is the trade-off between making your UI look like the platform UI, like iOS, Android, and looking like your branded thing? And it seems like people were more concerned back then about making an iOS app look like an iOS app and making an Android app look like an Android app. And now I just don't think that's such an issue. Do you?
I don't think so. I think you're right. I think Jobs was big on skeuomorphic design and he wanted, you know, there was always a threat they wouldn't let it go through the store if you didn't make it look like an iPhone app.
Yeah.
And so there was a time when that mattered. And then Facebook came along and said, nope, Facebook looks like Facebook.
Yeah.
And then some, and then corporate internal, you're like, no, it looks like corporate internal.
Yeah.
And I mean, I do think Tyler falls into this category. You have a bunch of different apps and you see an advantage to a common look and feel.
Absolutely.
But I'm not going to let you go, Nathan, on the whole accessibility thing. So do you spend some time on visually impaired or audible impaired, like how different folks can use this app?
Yeah, we do. We, again, what's nice is a lot of the components kind of have support for that already, right? All the area labels and what's there. The other piece is because we're on a whole bunch of buses across the US and Canada, we see laws coming out all the time that kind of require this, right? Colorado, if you've worked with something in that state recently, you kind of know that they have this initiative right now that by June of this year, people are starting to get fined if it's not accessibility right out of the box, right? So we kind of have that in mind, knowing how public facing it can be and all that sort of stuff.
And often public sector is expected to be the forefront of that. You need to solve it first. Yeah.
Correct. Right. The law comes from the government. The government better be compliant. Right.
Yeah.
So
totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then, yeah, when you think about phones, like there's a lot of different ways to do that. You could provide this whole interface as audio only.
Correct.
In theory, if you think it through properly.
Yeah. And we've talked about that before. We were going through the app a couple months ago. We're like, yeah, you know, we can improve a few areas and really start dialing some things in. Mm-hmm. What gets complicated is the map, right? How do I, in an OpenGL screen, kind of explain what's going on? So we've talked about how we can kind of accomplish that.
Yeah, I think you want to, I mean, in the end, if somebody else was operating that app on behalf of somebody and describing what was going on, they don't be that precise. It's like, yep, the bus is in motion. It's this far away from the stop. It's expected at this time.
Yeah,
which is it's where it should be once.
Correct. Yeah. And it's kind of how we want to see how far we can go with it is kind of what we're starting to play around with, right? Because I might have a kid in sixth grade and a kid in 10th grade, and one's going to the middle school, one's going to the high school. How do I explain now both buses and their relationship to where I am and where they're going?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's actually, I think that'd be a really cool project. That'd be really fun. It's like, how do I do this well where people are wowed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Like I kind of like the idea of using that interface because the parent is driving and does want to know where their kid is, and you don't want to tap their eyes.
Right.
Like, can I pump this through Bluetooth and tell you safely?
Yep.
That, yeah. The bus is fine.
Yep.
That's a good feature.
Yeah. We have some experience in this already because another app, this one's Xamarin because it's only for Android, but we actually put tablets on school buses. And once the tablet goes on a school bus, a lot of, I'd say a fair amount of states have the rule where the screen just has to be black when the bus is in motion. So we are almost audio only from this point on, right? How far away am I from my stop? Where am I taking my directions? So we basically, a lot of our testing is done with just the screen off, and how well can you understand what's going on with it being completely blacked out?
That's really cool.
Yeah. And some great user acceptance testing to just watch what does a driver need when in motion from my app? What will make them the most benefit?
Yep. Did you actually go around with drivers? Not you personally, but somebody in the company go around with drivers and get their feedback?
I actually did. And there's some people in the dev team that did. So I, before I was a manager, I was actually one of the lead devs on that project. And I went across the US riding buses with, you know, all sorts of kids on different districts and, you know, got to see it firsthand how it can both impact, but how my mind is, I don't know if they did the right thing putting a developer on a bus, because now all of a sudden I'm thinking of 20 more problems I have to fix, seeing like what can happen, right?
I've always been a big fan of this, of putting the developer into the position of the user. Because they do come away with exactly that. Oh, I've seen how they actually use this, and we've been thinking about this entirely wrong.
Yep.
It's powerful. And it also connects up, like we can get really abstracted from our software.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like when you see it in the field helping people, it's pretty powerful.
Yeah. No, it's great to see the kind of the impact you can make, right? I mean, I did not realize, I keep telling people before I worked at Tyler, I did not think this much about school buses, right? I started working at Tyler when I was 20. So I was only in a school bus 2 years before this, and I still did not think of a school bus as much as I do today.
You were more school bus savvy than most.
Right.
That's really funny.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's one of those truths. That, like, the great thing is when we do this kind of tech right, it's almost invisible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that they, you have to sort of have a moment and go, wow, I whipped out my phone and it told me where my kid was,
yes,
you know, in seconds, including dealing with all this, you know, it's a heavy snow day, but no, the bus is in motion and fine.
Yeah. Like, yep.
That's what you wanted to know. Right. And that's really thinking about all the pieces that had to work together to give you a good answer.
So
it just wasn't possible. Not that long.
Going back to the notifications thing, what kind of notifications do you have? Obviously, like if the bus breaks down, side of the road, accident, whatever.
Yeah. So we support a whole bunch. So there's a couple of them are actually integrated directly with the tablet, which again, talking about saving computing resources, yeah, it's the tablet on the bus with the district's local map and where the bus currently is, where they're going next, is the one doing all those ETA calculations, right? Here's the 10 parents I need to notify that I'm about to be at their stop because I, as a driver, said it's my next one and I got three more turns to make. So that's awesome, right? The tablet's doing all the work for the mobile device.
Yeah, the nice little localized service there. It's in the best position to know. Yep. And the workload's not more than a tablet can handle.
I imagine if a bus breaks down, there could be a myriad of reasons that you won't know. So the driver can type in to the tablet, I'm sure, ran out of gas, hit a tree, dog, you know, hit a deer, whatever.
Yeah, they can let dispatch know. Dispatch can let X number of parents know, whether based off the bus or even, you know, we track how far along the buses and the route. So I only need to notify parents after said stop, right? I've made it halfway through. Now I can tell the other half. We're working on Nexus, and I'm interested to see how we can do this with Maui, but we're working on doing those live activities, right? So if you've ever done an Uber and you can kind of see it live update, it's not quite a push notification, right? It's one of those live tracker ones. We're trying to play around with that to see how far we can take it, where if you don't even have to open the app and now you're fully functioning off push notifications, that's kind of awesome, right? I kind of have less resources on my side and you're getting this up-to-date information without even opening the app.
Right. You take like the GPS coordinates and stream them to a service somewhere and pick them up on the client. Yeah.
Yep.
Just to be able to say, tell me when they're 10 minutes out.
Yep.
So I can get there on time. That's clever. And again, that would actually save resources and not leaning on the app all the time. You're not wasting anybody's time that way.
Correct. If I can get everything from that live activity, it's all technically feeding from that tablet device. And then they never open the app. I mean, we're not checking anything, right? It's all coming directly from the bus. Yep. Mm.
All right. What haven't we talked about on this app? What is your testing strategy? Like what tools are you using when you do a build?
Yeah, good question. So we do a fair amount of unit testing. Our API is also in .NET. So that's all unit tested with XUnit. Because all of our UI code is shared, we're using BUnit to test as much as we can, right? So as much as I can test in terms of rendering or business logic I might have on the client side, testing that. Kind of like I would an API, right? Mm-hmm. And then we also use Browser Stack to kind of run end-to-end tests on here, right? So launching a couple devices, making sure they can do X number of user functions, right? Can I add my student? Can I load the bus? Can I create a new account? All that sort of stuff on number of devices and let us know. So we don't have obviously coverage everywhere. I don't think anyone ever does anymore. Just development moves so quick, it's hard. Mm-hmm. But those unit tests, especially BUnit, knowing that I can kind of have the same rendering and the same functionality really quickly is good to see.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's great.
The main thing is don't make the same mistake again and again. Make new mistakes.
Correct.
Put enough testing in place to capture the last mistake so it doesn't happen again.
Correct. Yeah, we try to write as many tests up front, but we have a policy here where if you get a bug or something client reported, it has to get fixed with the unit test, right? It's always that regression case.
Yeah. First make a test that fails, then fix it, and the test doesn't fail. Now it's actually fixed.
Exactly. Yeah.
We love BUnit, love Agile.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just good stuff.
Good.
It's a great product. Yeah.
Well, and also I appreciate you not fixating on test coverage. Is that is its own kind of crazy.
Yeah. If you were trying to shoot for 100% test coverage, then it's kind of, you're never going to get it.
It's an input.
Right. So the nice thing that developers can understand is we give them all the tools and they're able to do it up front. Cause sometimes it is faster. If I'm building an API service and I don't want to keep trying to mock all this data from the tablet, yes, I'm going to write a unit test because I can grab something that's usable and keep iterating over it. Mm-hmm. And then the simple requirement of just, if you're fixing a bug, you have to write a test is something that people can kind of swallow.
And those would end up being the best tests anyway.
Yeah.
So they were ones with a bug that made it to the field and you wrote, and the testing for it is more complicated than you think. You would never write that test out of your head, just considering it. So you write this better test and then, you know, go through that process and fix it. And then maybe it never, ever hits it again, but at least you won't have that problem.
You do mocking?
We do. Yes. Well, we do mocking because a lot of this data comes from our main application, student transportation, right? And I don't want to have that running for this. So we mock a lot of the database and kind of just core data, right? So the way this app works is a lot of it's read-only anyway. A parent's not really obviously updating their location for the bus and all that. So we kind of can get away with a little more mocking than you might be able to.
So you have like bogus services that run and send mock data, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Bogus services. We use, I forget the, I think it's called test containers.
Yeah.
So even some of our implementations with Redis and how we, you know, not kill our services by having 100,000 parents watch buses, right? How do we kind of scale that efficiently? We can kind of do that.
That's cool.
Mocking it. Yeah.
Well, and a lot of that, I think a lot of, just because you've got a dozen parents wanting one bus doesn't mean you can cache that once. It's all the same data. So,
correct. Yeah,
very granular.
Yep.
Sounds like a fantastic, very successful product.
I appreciate it. It's been a fun one to work on. I selfishly like being involved in this project. It was a really fun one for me to work on, the team to work on, you know, kind of even development, kind of picking this up from what we do day on to work on this. Everyone's kind of enjoyed the dev life cycle more than anything else, right? Yeah. It's kind of easy to get going. We had someone start a month ago and they were making fixes in the app a couple of days later, right? It was just easy to pick up.
That's a great metric.
Yeah, very cool.
How many days to productivity for a new worker?
Yeah.
Great very metric. Good.
Well, Nathan, what's next for you? What's in your inbox?
More Blazor. So this has been a little test for us, and it's been successful enough where we've got a few more around the corner that we're working on, and I hope that .NET kind of sees the benefit of Blazor as we get more and more into this space and keeps dumping time and energy into it. So hopefully, I'll keep using it as long as I. Keep working here. So
that's great. Well, thanks for sharing the story with us, and congratulations.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun being able to talk to you guys and kind of share what we did, right? I hear you talk about Blazor all the time at .NET Rocks, so I wanted to be like, oh, I got a story for Carl that he'll love.
You certainly did.
Yep, you lit me up, man. All right, thanks again, and we'll see you next time on .NET Rocks.
.NET Rocks is brought to you by Franklin's Net and produced by Plop Studios, a full-service audio, video, and post-production facility located physically in New London, Connecticut, and of course in the cloud. Online at pwop.com. Visit our website at dotnetrocks.com for RSS feeds, downloads, mobile apps, comments, and access to the full archives going back to show number one, recorded in September 2002. And make sure you check out our sponsors. They keep us in business. Now go write some code. See you next time.
At Arizona State University, we're bringing world-class education from our globally acclaimed faculty to you. Ranked number one in innovation for 10 consecutive years and number two among public universities for employability, ASU isn't just ahead of the curve, it's creating new paths to success. Earn your degree from the nation's most innovative university. Online, that's a degree better. Explore more than 300 undergraduate, graduate, and certificate programs at asuonline.asu.edu.
Texting terms at unlock.com/SMS. Privacy policy at unlock.com/privacy-policy. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Terms and conditions apply. For full details, see unlock.com/legal. After portrayal.
Lisa, thanks for having me over. Your new kitchen is gorgeous. How'd you find the money to do it?
We worked with this great company, Unlock. They help you unlock the future value of your home to get the cash you need today.
So it's a home equity loan?
No, it's not a loan at all. There's no monthly payments and no interest charges ever. And you can use the money however you want. We were able to redo our kitchen and pay off our credit card debt.
Wow, Jack and I could really use this to finally pay off our old student loan debt. How do I get started?
It's easy. Just go to their website.
Text EQUITY to 865-865 to unlock the value in your home and get up to $500,000 in cash with no monthly payments and no interest ever. Pay off debt, improve your home, add to your retirement fund. It's up to you. Text EQUITY to 865-865. Text the word EQUITY to 865-865. Text EQUITY to 865-865 now.